Carmen, Ohio, the OSU alma mater, was written in 1902 by freshman Fred Cornell, and it is Ohio State's oldest song still in use. You can hear it at every home game in the Shoe when the team gathers after the game. That is just one of many traditions, one of my favorite traditions about Ohio State football, and that Ohio State football fans follow with almost religious fervor. But it wasn't always the case. Dispatch sports writer and columnist Bob Hunter writes about the before and after in his new book, St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. This is Bob's eighth book. He's a sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. He is an Ohio University graduate and a member of the Board of Trustees of the Columbus Historical Society. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Great to be here, Ann.
I mentioned that you write about the before and after, but really it's only a really short section on the before. Because it wasn't but a couple decades after that things went ballistic at OSU.
Yeah, the before is interesting. It's interesting, though, because it's so crazy now. And the before was not so crazy. I mean, you know, people were interested. There were, you know, it was just another team.
It was a game.
It was a game. And this was really a baseball town. I mean, the Columbus baseball team was the big game in town. The football was interesting. And, you know, at the same time, the Columbus Panhandles came along and they were a pro team and they were playing on Sunday and they weren't quite as big as the college team. But it still wasn't that, really wasn't that big a deal until, you know, the 1916.
The first game played ever was against Ohio Wesleyan University, right? Up
Correct.
In Delaware,
Correct.
And they had basically the same number of students in each university.
Yeah, actually, Ohio Wesleyan, I believe, was bigger at that
okay.
point, actually. And Columbus was obviously bigger than Delaware, but it was a battle of equals. It wasn't Ohio Wesleyan and Ohio State were it was the same.
And it makes you wonder, in the long run, what would Ohio State be without its football team? Surely it would be a Big Ten university. It would, you know, all the big state universities are big as they go. But would it be what it is today without Ohio State football?
That's a great question, and it's a question. You know, when I did the book about Chick Harley, that was part of the thing. Was, you know, Chick came along, all of a sudden Ohio State football became so big.
1923 or something.
He played 1916, 1917, okay. 1919, and they built Ohio Stadium basically because they were so successful that the interest exploded in the team. It was really a big deal, but you know, it's interesting to think about, well, if he doesn't come along, if the team doesn't do that, if the team is just okay, pretty good or whatever, but the fanaticism never develops, there's a lot of you know, there's a lot of money goes to the university. A lot of people come to the university partially because of the football, because of what they know about the football team. So does the university become as big? Maybe not. Maybe
they give to the university because of the football team. So what, by the way, you're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Bob Hunter. He's an author and sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. His latest book is called St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. If you have a question or comment for Bob Hunter, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page. Post your question or comment there. And, you know, you can always tweet us at WOSU All Sides. So, what's the difference between routine fanaticism? Because all of us who come from different places and have different beloved teams think, well, we're fanatics about our team too. What's the difference between what you think of as routine fanaticism and Buckeye football? Football fanaticism.
I think it almost gets to having religious overtones around here. I think people. You know, we were talking before the show. I said Kentucky basketball may be the only thing I can think of that has a similar thing. There's fanatics for every team, but you know, if you drive around the freeway around here on a football Saturday and the freeways are empty, I mean it's the best time to go grocery shopping.
Yeah,
it's crazy. You think, how could that be?
Don't go an hour before the game though. Because it's a nut house.
It's been a while since I've seen that because I'm
You're
always
there,
at the games.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's you know, I talked about in the book, the one for me was 2002 when they're going to have some autographs signed in December at City Center Mall. And they said there's some players are going to be there.
This was how many years ago?
This is 2002.
Okay.
And the team was undefeated, okay, but nobody knew they were going to win the national championship at this point or whatever, but it was Christmas. And so I go down there, I think, well, maybe there's a story here. And you get down there and these people are lined up for blocks to get into City Center Mall, and they don't even know
who.
They don't even know who's going to sign. They don't know if it's going to be Joe Blow or whether it's going to be Craig Krenzel, you know, and they don't care. It's going to be an Ohio State football player, and they're going to go get a signature, you know. And that, to me, is over-the-top fanaticism. That's more than...
But you'd already been covering them for a long time, but even you were shocked.
I started asking people, like, you know, who's up there? I don't know.
You had a great moment in that, though, when you said it really hit home when you heard somebody behind you say something and you turned around and it was like a Penn State or I can't remember. It was someone from another.
Yeah, it was a Pittsburgh.
Steelers.
Yeah, it was. And he was like, what?
He was shopping.
He was shopping and he was in this. He suddenly found himself in this mob and it was like, what is this? Well, you know, well, they're going up there to get. There's a football player up there somewhere. It's like, what? It's crazy. Just absolutely crazy.
So it doesn't get the edge of the fanaticism hasn't really been rounded off at all over time. It seems to get more so. You refer to occasionally people with their scarlet and gray bathrooms or their toilet seats or their rumpus rooms.
That's
their
for real.
Basements.
I mean, that's
I've seen people with
right.
living rooms with scarlet.
I mean, that really is for real. I mean, that you know, OSU played at West Virginia several years ago, and we were talking about the, you know, we went over to the kind of the border of Ohio and West Virginia, some of the towns over there to interview some OSU fans, and like I was finding people with bathrooms, toilet seats, you know, Woody Hayes photo on their family room wall.
You talk about the ubiquity of the OSU fans, and I know what you mean because when I was a columnist at the Dispatch, every once in a while I would throw OSU Buckeyes in a column somehow. I'd manufacture an excuse because then I knew it would, if I mentioned that, then people who just are Googling OSU Buckeyes around the world. I mean, I would start getting emails or something from around, I would go around the world over a 12-hour period. It was amazing how many more people read the column if I had OSU Buckeyes.
It is unbelievable. And we used to, you know, I can't figure out how they measure how many hits and all that they have on the internet, but you can tell if you know I've gotten emails from people in Japan and Saudi Arabia and all these and it's partially because number one there's so many alums OSU has so many alums everywhere, you know, if you go to
and they live long too
you go like every we go to these road games, you go to a game in Arizona and there's it's always this huge number of fans, and it's partially because there's alumni clubs everywhere, and there's these fans are everywhere. But yeah, I'm sure that's one of the biggest things on our website.
You said, oh, absolutely. You said one statistician came up with a number like 3.2 million.
Yeah, and I think
Buckeye fans out there.
Yeah,
that's a small country.
That's probably low.
So saying Buckeye Nation is. Not much of an exaggeration.
No, it's not. And I do want to say, and I did this at the end of the book, partially, you know, I used to get emails from people because I would talk about, I would write something that would kind of make fun of the fanatics who wanted to fire the coach or whatever. And then I would get an email from some elderly woman who would say, well, I'm an OSU, you should need to stop making fun of me because I'm a good, and I would think, no, it's not you. You don't understand. There's a million different kinds of fans, and there is this percentage who are fanatics, and there's this percentage who are just very civil, you know, normal fans. But it's not one, you can't just pick out one little element of that.
When I was a student at Michigan State, I remember there was always that one game every year when it was at Michigan State's home. Where there'd be that team with all the red and white. I mean, I really didn't get the scarlet and gray thing, but it was a lot of red. And it took me a few years to figure out, and I think after moving here, that, oh, my gosh, you know, there were the rowdier fans, the more exuberant and enthusiastic fans, if you were just a casual observer.
Yeah, and there also seems to be more people who take it really to heart. If the team loses, there's, you know— I know people who are depressed.
Yeah.
I mean, just totally depressed. You know, I mean, I've got friends like that. We used to go out to eat with them once in a while on Saturday night. They'd lose, and you know, and my buddy would just be—he wouldn't have anything to say. And I mean, what's wrong? Well, you know, I just
Absolutely.
It's a bad game.
Even when Michigan State loses, I don't want to talk about it, by the way. But I figure, well, at least everyone will be in a good mood.
Well, you have to be happy. You have to be happy by the resurgence up there. I mean, it's the program is really, really good now.
I actually started there when I was on academic probation and was bumped off of national television for something like 3 or 4 years. So that'll really hurt you. You mentioned at the outset that it's primarily at the outset of your book that it's primarily because of the former coaches and administrators that the school's football history is as rich and detailed as it is. And I was wondering, don't coaches and administrators drive programs at every school anyways, what is that special relationship between the fans and the coach at Ohio State football?
Well, there have been the coaches here are an interesting. I mean,
I want to talk about Woody Hayes later.
I was going to say you could do an interesting study just on the coaches. You know, like my 85-year-old mother read this book, and the one that she was just taken by was Francis Schmidt. She said this guy is so funny and all this goofy stuff he did and the profanity and the whole thing, and she just was like taken. You know, she didn't know anything about Francis Schmidt before she read this, mm-hmm. and she just thought this was like the guy was a scream. And I think. The graveyard of the coaches things. These guys, it's unbelievable the number of these coaches who basically quit or left because they couldn't deal with it. They didn't like it.
It's too much pressure.
It was too much pressure, you know, and that's what happened. You know, the graveyard of the coaches title kind of came from this period in the 40s after Paul Brown left and these, you know, you have this succession of coaches who are not really prepared for this. They take this job and they're like, holy cow, I don't want to do this. And they end up, in some cases, coaching somewhere. Wes Fessler left after the Snow Bowl and all of a sudden he's coaching at Minnesota. You know, he's just didn't want any part of this. One coach ended up at OU. Another coach ended up at Colgate, of all places. I mean, it's
not a big football.
No, but just kind of like... Okay, I want to coach, but I don't want to deal with this.
It makes Urban Meyer all the more interesting because, of course, he came from another, pressure cooker and left because of that. And, you know, talk about going, I mean, I don't want to overuse the metaphor, but jumping from the frying pan into the,
I thought that was the most interesting thing in that whole story. I think this is for him to leave Florida because... too much stress, and to come here and say, okay, I'm going to work less, I'm going to get my life, my priorities in order. It's like, holy cow, what a place to get your priorities in order.
Is that possible? He's from Ohio, so right. He can't.
I understand why he wants to do it, but I mean, is that even possible here? I don't know. That'll be an interesting thing to watch.
It will. My guest is Bob Hunter. He's author and sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about his latest book. It's called St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
President Obama and Mitt Romney cram for the first presidential debate. An evening Chris Christie promises will turn this race upside down. Missouri's Todd Akin longs for the more ladylike Claire McCaskill of 2006. And balloting gets underway. It's early voting. I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us from St. Louis. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And join our station and WOSU-TV for the first presidential debate. It'll focus on domestic policy. It's tonight at 9. Be sure to listen on 89.7 NPR News or watch on WOSU-TV. 63 degrees with a few clouds, a high of 72 today. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 52. Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you. Welcome back. My guest is Bob Hunter. He's an author. He's written 7 other books. We're talking about his new book today. It's called St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Hi, Jerome in Marysville. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention that the elementary school my kids went to, the Friday before the Buckeye-Michigan game, they would take the day off and do OSU crafts.
Or they work on the song, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And make Buckeye necklaces and stuff. And I said, you know, I said to the principal, I said, well, one, what happened to Title IX? and two, I said, there's lots of good colleges in the area. There's lots of, you know.
Oh, Jerome, you're so not from here.
I know. And I said, why not celebrate, you know, have an intellectual achievement day? And the principal said the teachers would never stand for it.
It's the teachers. Jerome, thanks for the call.
Thanks
for the laugh. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You mentioned that fanatics think all true fans should blindly support the head coach. And I got that sometimes when I would make passing remarks about the vests or something like that or whatever. And people would really become offended. It was like I had offended, you know, the leader of their religious order.
No, that really is true. And that's why I... the emails that I would get on some of these, you know, Jim, for a while, Jim Tressel had almost like this godlike aura, you know, there were people that would, you couldn't, if you even, you know.
Well, he wouldn't say anything in the interviews. And I always thought, how are these fans satisfied by him? Because he never really says anything.
And you know, that changed. I mean, he didn't say anything, but the fans' perception of that over the years kind of changed. And maybe it was because, you know, he won the national championship early and it was like whatever he said was fine.
Yeah.
And then as they after he lost a couple and the people started to get irritated, then they got irritated because he wasn't answering the questions.
And everybody's a journalist.
They want to know why, you know, the offensive coordinator isn't being fired. And they want to know why, you know, Tress didn't answer this in the interviews. And so that did change a little bit. But yeah, there was a point, and there are still people out there who think that, you know, he walks on water. Yeah. I mean, there's still some people out there.
That it wasn't fair
that
what
it wasn't
happened
fair.
To
right.
him. Philip in Grove City, you're on the air. Your daughter is a cheerleader at OSU? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Wow.
Last
you're like
year
royalty or something. You know?
Well, I tell you what, she is. They treat them like rock stars. It's amazing. Oh, it really is. I mean, I've never been to a football game before. And so we started going. And the first game, it was like, okay, meet us at the grassy knoll. That's where it all starts. And I didn't even know what that was. We were asking around, pretty much stumbling around trying to figure out where we're going. I mean, all these people. And that's where they start out. The cheerleaders come out and get the crowd started. And then the band comes out of, the St. John's. And then they all get together, and the girls get on the guy's shoulders, and they lead the band into the stadium. And it's crazy. I mean, people are just lined up, and I can see why people get wrapped up in that. I mean, this was the first experience for me.
It's cultish almost, is what you're saying.
it was great. I mean... And then you're outside, you know, and then they go into the band goes into the stadium, and they kind of run into the stadium, and you can just hear the stadium roar, and it's quite an experience.
But I love the band.
Yeah.
We were just talking about the fact that the Script Ohio, the people see that for the first time, and even people who aren't even fans are taken, you know, it's kind of an electrifying moment. I don't know what you thought when you saw it for the first time, but.
Yeah, I was shocked because we went last year. It was pretty tough because it was really hot that day. And I mean, the band members, you know, they have the black on, and I mean, the alumni were there, and people were falling over like flies. It was crazy hot. It was crazy hot. And,
but they don't change their get up.
Oh, by golly, they were just, you know, they were there. And we were sitting next to people, alumni from like the 60s. And, you know, I mean, they have their instrument and they're, you know, It was crazy. The alumni are so strong there. They do treat like the players and the cheerleaders and stuff. I mean, it's amazing how they treat them. It's really mm-hmm. good. I mean,
well, lucky,
good
yeah.
Thing.
You're a lucky dad. Your daughter's got that kind of experience at OSU. Well, Philip, thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet.
Bye.
614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call, join the conversation with Bob Hunter. We're talking about his book, St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. You said, I think this was in your introduction, that the religious nature, the fanaticism of OSU football is emblematic, however, of a larger national story about the sport. And you, the litany, I mean, I've been following it for the last couple of years, but the litany you went through of problems across the nation, exploding in the Penn State story, before that, exploding in the OSU story, it really was quite shocking.
Yeah, it's if you look at the programs, I mean, the number of programs that have had problems in the last 4 or 5 years, it covers a lot of ground. Michigan, Boise State, Oregon. I mean, a lot of the schools that are, Auburn. I mean, we go through these. You go through the list, and it's most of the schools that are big national football powers. But a lot of them that aren't too. I mean, a lot of schools that want to be big national football powers. And I don't know. I mean, I think, I think it's one reason why the NCAA and why, the presidents are trying to get this all reined in a little bit, because mm-hmm. it's obviously a big business. And there's always been this kind of hypocrisy of trying to make this seem like it's, well, this is just really college sports and
rah-rah.
But you can walk in Ohio Stadium and look at the boxes and the TV.
It's a $1 billion
yes,
business.
Yes, it's a huge industry.
I mean, Texas alone has its own station now.
Yeah.
Just devoted to Texas football.
Yeah.
Just the Big Ten Network, but just one. Which is another huge fanatical school.
Which you could do here. You know,
I mean,
you can't do it now because of the Big Ten Network, but I mean, that could have been done here. I mean, it's
there
the same
debate.
Thing.
There was debate.
Yeah. It's, like I said, it's a business. It's not just sport.
Listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Bob Hunter about his new book, St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. You can tweet us at WOSU All Sides or go to our Facebook page if you'd rather comment there. Or you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You mentioned the inveterate optimism as another symptom of the fans' intense love affair with the Buckeyes. What do you mean by that? Like, even this season when things are so low because none of it matters, they're still pretty big.
This season was really probably a great example of that, because the team was 6-7 last year, had all sorts of problems. As soon as OSU hired Urban Meyer, there was this instant notion
once
that,
again, the coach.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're going to go 12-0. We're going to win all of our games. We may not go to a bowl game, but we're going to, everything's okay now. This is great. It really is amazing. That was an amazing transformation. Whether you like Urban or don't like him, the school couldn't have hired anybody who could have turned that around that quickly. I mean, it was really, the program was having a lot of, just because of the whole scandal, the recruiting was falling off.
Although he picked that up,
and it just immediately he mm-hmm. came in and it just turned right around. So I mean, that was unbelievable. But I mean, that's a sign right there. We've talked about the writers have talked about, this team. How good is this team? Is it really that good? Could it be that good coming off of last year? I mean, that's not all just problems. There's talent issues there too that make you go 6-7, mm-hmm. but people think. I mean, I've heard people think now. Well, maybe they could, even though they can't go to a bowl game, if they go undefeated, they're still in the AP poll.
And
they
we'll
could be
always
number
remember.
One.
Yeah, exactly.
So look out,
Bill, in the University District. You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Bob, I'm really glad that you've got a book out. I'm looking forward to it, and I'll pick a copy up.
I appreciate that, Bill.
I've enjoyed your writing over the years. The big question, I'm an alumnus of Ohio State, and Woody was the coach when I was there, but I'm a Boston kid. If Columbus had professional sports and major professional sports, do you think it would be the same with the Buckeyes?
Back in the day, you mean, you know, that in other words, the NHL came along a little too late to have much of an impact?
Well, and it's not really a major sport when they quit every 10 years and don't even have a
That might change.
Another topic for another day.
Yeah. You just bummed me out, Bill. But Bob Hunter.
Now, that's a good question, and I'll give you a really good example of why that's a good question. Minnesota used to have a heck of a football program. I mean, in the 30s, it was one of the top national programs. And Minnesota and Michigan was a huge rivalry, and when the Vikings when the Vikings came along specifically, I mean, the Twins came there. That, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul started getting these pro teams, but the big one was the Vikings. When the Vikings got there, the pro football became a huge deal, and the Gophers started sliding, and the program has not been the same since. And there's, you know,
do you think that could happen here, though?
I think.
Would anyone even bother to bring a pro football game?
I think that would be a hard thing to happen here now. I don't think that could happen. I mean, but I think his point is well taken. If this had happened maybe 30, 40 years ago, maybe it would have. Maybe it would. It could have changed because, you know, the community changes. The
city's grown a lot.
Mm-hmm. But at this point, I don't think that could happen.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot. The city's grown a lot, and so it's kind of surprising when we hear the other fellow, I think it was Philip from Grove City, whose daughter is a cheerleader, never been to a game before. I mean, there's a lot of people. Back in the day, everybody at least knew somebody who went to a game. You know, now there are a lot of people who never will go to a game because the city in the central Ohio is that big now.
Yeah,
and that's hard for some big Buckeye fans to accept.
There's a lot of, you go to the spring game, and there are thousands of fans that go to the spring game who are people who just really can't afford to go to the other games,
right.
and they don't have or they don't have connections to get tickets. Now lately, you know, there have been some tickets. They're not partially because of the terrible non-conference schedule. People aren't sure they want to pay $70 to go to the games. So the stadium's been expanded and there are empty seats. But now there's a lot of people that just don't. You know, I've seen that crowd at the spring game, and a lot. I mean, it's kind of touching in a way when you see people. They bring their kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a family of
it's as close as they're
working
gonna
class
get.
Family, and they bring four kids, and they hey, we're in the Ohio Stadium. We're watching Ohio State football, and it's costing us $5 as opposed to $70.
Well, the spring game, it's incredible how big of a deal that is too. We have an email from Charlie. Right, so I graduated from OSU this past spring. Whenever someone finds out that I went to Ohio State, they always ask whether or not I attended games, and the topic revolves around football. No one has asked me about my scholarly achievements or other activities that I participated in. Even my own family only wants to know if I've gone to games or if I can get them tickets. Well, it's true. When I moved here, moved over from the Dispatch to WOSU/OSU, I had a lot of calls about that. Email from Debbie. She goes, in New York City, I was waiting for David Cassidy at the stage door. Cassidy fanatic, yes. Another girl was from Columbus, and I asked if she knew the OSU score, and she did. Neither of us were football fans, yet it still mattered. I gave David Cassidy two Buckeyes when I saw him. And this is not even a fan, really. Well, let's get to some calls. Before that, I want to talk about why football, why not basketball or something like that. Patrick in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Every day when I go to work, I drive down along the river, and I drive by a $5 million boathouse that was built with football money. And a lot of other sports that the football team, takes care of. You say it is big business, but that's where all the money goes to all the other coaches, the travel expenses and whatnot.
Well, the coaches.
Yeah.
There's no question. There's no question. Football finances that huge, huge athletic program. I mean,
37 teams they have, and you look at the SEC, nobody down there has more than 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those other teams attract a lot of people, too.
Right.
Right. It is big business, but that's where all the money goes. The athletic department doesn't take any money from the general budget or anything else from the university, mm-hmm. so it's all self-sustaining.
Right. It's true.
It's true.
So are you a big fan, Patrick?
Oh, yeah. Grew up here in Columbus and loved the Buckeyes and just recently got season tickets, so pretty happy scooter.
Did you grow up a fanatic?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I remember Archie and Pete Johnson and all the boys, and they actually came to our school and spoke to us, and, you know, we were just in awe.
Yeah, my Archie spoke to one of my sons in the second grade class, and my son came home and said, Archie Griffin spoke to our class. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, he talked about the three D's, and he ticked them right off.
He actually listened
to what he was saying, and I thought, well, that's pretty impressive.
I interviewed Archie Griffin one time, and I got more calls from friends saying, wow. Like, you know, I was talking to him about the new union. Right.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you, Amy. Patrick, thanks for your call.
Just one other thing.
Okay.
I think what you need to also take into effect is I think it was George Mason or one of those schools that got into the Final Four for basketball. And you look at their enrollment, how it spiked. And one of the emails or one of those things you were just talking about a minute ago about how some guy never gets questioned about his, you know, athletic or his
scholarly
academic career.
Yeah.
Right, but I think it's been proven over and over again that a school gets hot in sports and their enrollment spikes.
I don't think there's any doubt about it.
You can also look at that with Ohio State. I mean, look how many kids go to school there and how dominant we've been in basketball for a short period, but that's coming around again with Thad Matta, thankfully, but also with football.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we said earlier that I'm not sure if football weren't as big as it is, that this university would have become what it's become. I mean, I don't think there's any question that it's attracted a lot of people to the university, a lot of dollars, affected the academic programs too.
Yep. Patrick, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Take care. Email from Randall. He writes, my wife and I went to an OSU game a few years ago and were at a party for OSU alumni, and they started to play Carmen, Ohio, and everyone stood up and took off their hats. I didn't stand and kept on sitting, and my wife got mad at me for not standing. I'm not an OSU grad, but I did graduate from a Big Ten school, not Michigan. So I felt that it was like, So I felt that it was like standing for Canada's national anthem when I'm a U.S. citizen. No disrespect, just not for me. Should my wife be mad at me for this, or should I have stood and sucked it up? Now, I got to tell you, I was posting on Facebook one time and mentioned, you know, go Spartans or something like that. And somebody responded, and now that you work at OSU, you really need to think about changing your allegiance. And I thought, wow, really?
One of the most amazing things to me is that people can't understand why a kid who plays, say, high school football in Columbus and decides to go to Michigan, why he should have the right to do that. I mean, it's like what is this kid thinking? He's a terrible traitor, whatever. It's like this kid has no rights, you know?
And it's not even that he go to OSU. He's just anywhere but Michigan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, seriously, really? Don't you think if this kid wants to go to Michigan, he should be able to, you know?
And I think the whole saying Michigan out loud, it's like he who must not be named from Harry Potter or something. It's like University of Michigan is a bad thing. And that kind of comes from, of course, Woody Hayes and his relationship with the University of Michigan, which we'll talk about when we return with Bob Hunter, author and sports reporter, columnist, I should say, for the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about his new book. It's called St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR. News.
Phil? Phil Connors? Phil Connors, I thought that was you.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for watching.
Hey. Character actor Stephen Tobolowsky was Bill Murray's annoying high school friend in Groundhog Day. He's also had recurring roles in Heroes, Deadwood, Californication, and Glee. We'll talk with Tobolowsky about his new memoir on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. Support 89.7 NPR News right now and register to win an iPad. Our fall membership drive begins soon, and by making your pledge now, you'll be automatically entered to win. No pledge is necessary. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. The deadline is October 11th. And be sure to join All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow for analysis of the first presidential debate. And then, What's in a Color? Considering the impact of skin color on social interactions throughout history with the author of a new book on the topic. That's All Sides tomorrow from 10 until noon. Support for 89.7 comes from Green Bean Delivery, offering home delivery of fresh organic produce and natural groceries. Striving to make healthy eating more accessible to the communities of Greater Columbus. Details on Green Bean Delivery's products, as well as how to place an order, can be found online at greenbeandelivery.com. And support also comes from Palmer Miller Nelson Insurance Agency, Incorporated, serving Central Ohio homeowners and businesses since 1855. More information at 261-6300 or online at pmnins.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Bob Hunter. He's an author. He's written seven other books. He's also a sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. We are talking about his newest book. It's called St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. If you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about Woody Hayes and the impact that he had on the program and the rivalry with Michigan and all of that. Bob.
Well, I mean, there's no.
How do you even begin to measure?
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, it's the OSU Michigan rivalry was obviously a big rivalry before Woody came along. Mm-hmm. But the 10 years, the Woody Bow years is really what created the rivalry as it is now.
The fanatical rivalry
took it over the top. I mean, it just totally took it over the top. And Woody was responsible for that because he was such a fanatic in his own way. You know, that we're talking about, you know, doesn't mention Michigan, the team up north, and, you know, all the stories that come out about, you know, pushing his car over the line to avoid buying state lines. We didn't have to buy gas in the state of Michigan, which I don't believe. but, you know, it's like you know, he swore that he saw spies in the upper levels of this very building, you know, the, you know, Fawcett Center. There's spies, Michigan spies over there looking at our practice field, you know, watching our practices. You know, it's just like, you know.
And yet you named the book for him,
yeah.
St. Woody.
Well, it's so appropriate. It's partially because in a way he is, in a way he isn't, and also because there are people who don't really know Woody today. He's become this huge icon. He's larger than life. He's this, you know, the guy everybody knows. And a lot of people don't really know any of the things he did. They don't know they don't know that he was kind of a nutcase in some ways. So, you know, yeah, they think of him as a saint, but if you read that chapter, you see, well,
he was human.
Yeah.
And he wasn't necessarily technically the greatest football coach ever.
No,
you wrote. I'm not saying that.
Yeah,
that's
not
me, everybody.
So you don't think so, huh?
That's not me. I read that somewhere.
No, I mean, he was stubborn. You know, I mean, he was, you know, we joke about him all the time now, still to this day. You know, you get to the 2 yard line or the 1 yard line, and a guy's, you know, they're handing these off tackle plays and they're pounding the center of the line trying to get in. Don't get in three times. And it's like, maybe they should try to throw it. Well, with Woody, it was like, you know, we're going to show those guys. We're men, you know. Well, that doesn't necessarily make you a great football coach. You know, I mean, it's like, that's like, yeah, this is macho. Okay, I'm, you know, we'll just show them who's better. Well, you know, coaches show every day that sometimes you change it up, you do something else because that makes you a better coach. That wasn't Woody, you know. Woody, in some ways, it took him a while. Change was forced on him a couple of times. You know, 1968, for example, you know, when you know, the team that won the national championship, you know, they were coming off an era there where they were not doing well, and Woody was in danger of being fired. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they had to make some changes in order to have those great teams. So,
you know, he was eventually fired. I happened to be at Arizona State when Frank Cush was fired for hitting a kid. Do they get just too big for their britches? Is that like, you know, nothing like that particularly happened with Jim Tressel. Was that another era of football coach when they do that kind of?
Woody couldn't have coached today the way he coached right. In those days. I mean, he would pound his player's shoulder pad. He'd scream at him, grab him by the helmet. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a physical guy. He ripped his caps up and stomped his watches. These were, you know, ploys by him. A lot of those. I mean, he would have the caps cut a little bit by the equipment people, and then he would go out there and when something would happen, he would rip the cap, you know, rip the bill off the cap, and he had these cheap watches that he would pull off and throw down and stomp. And then, you know, supposedly the players would think, oh my God, he stomped his $100 watch when it was probably a $250 piece of junk that he got, you know. But yeah, but I mean, he was a physical guy. I mean, the players used to talk about him punching. You know, he would turn around, something would happen in the game, he'd turn around and punch the guy next to him, and they say, you know, he's left-handed, don't stand there.
We have an email from Tom. He says, being a Bobcat alum, I saw this on Facebook and had to share it. Quote, I got my OU t-shirt because I went to Ohio University. You got your OSU t-shirt because you went to Walmart. And that's kind of mean, but Ohio State does have a huge local following, and it's not just of people who know somebody who went to Ohio State or their parents taught here or something like that or work here. It's just being here, yeah, being in Central Ohio.
People other than me have said this, but it's kind of our pro team. I mean, really, and that's that also
which was
is
the point that, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's no offense to the Blue Jackets or the Crew or anybody else. I mean, this is, you know, this is where all of the local, you know, if you're a local politician, you're playing to the OSU crowd, even if you're from Michigan. I mean, you're not stupid, you know. It's what
it
is.
It just makes you wonder about the whole Romney thing. Phil,
yes.
Are you actually calling from Little Rock?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I am an 06 grad from Ohio State and went in the Air Force as an officer straight after that. And what I wanted to talk about was this perception of Ohio State as an educational institution. Young officers in the Air Force introduce themselves. They typically ask, where did you go to school? And when I would respond, Ohio State, oftentimes there'd be snickering. There'd be a lot of snide comments about it not really being an educational institution, rather more just a football support program. And it's kind of this fanaticism, the rabid fanaticism around the world of Ohio State fans sometimes has a negative effect on the educational institution that is Ohio State.
Well, Bob, it's interesting you bring that up. Bob Hunter, as a graduate of the biggest party school of all time, Ohio University, which is a great school, and of course so is OSU. What do you think about that?
I think it's true, and I think that I think that's partially why a lot of the educators here are so sensitive to that. I mean, that's a really touchy issue, you know, like they're trying to have this terrific university with, you know, all these, you know, expanding these programs and tightening up the academic standards and all of that, and you're fighting this image, this kind of image out there that this is a football factory, you know. And for the guy who's not here for any of that and who's taking chemistry, that's probably frustrating when you get out and, you know, as he says, you get out in the world and it's like, oh yeah, you you went to that football school. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard the, you know, the party school thing with OU. I mean, for years, and there's certainly some truth to it. I mean, I had fun at OU, but I mean, I also did my work. So I mean, you know, it's like it's you know, it's all things for all people, right? I mean,
so mm-hmm. Phil, you're an 06 grad. Okay, so do you consider yourself a fanatic?
No, I oftentimes have to disarm the conversation by saying I went to Ohio State for an education, not to watch football.
Ooh.
Now, I did watch some football. I participated in many of the color guard raising of the flags at the game.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I watch it. It's the only way I can have a conversation with some of my friends during the year to watch football. But as a rabbit fan, no. I wear my Ohio State stuff as I travel around the world. Oftentimes people think I'm a huge football fan because of it. I kind of have to remind them that some of us did actually go to school to get educated.
Okay. All right, Phil, thanks so much for listening, and thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Take care. Now, Phyllis, in Columbus, you're going to be the contrarian here.
Yes.
Okay.
I have divided loyalties, and thank God West Virginia and Ohio State don't play often. Yeah, because it really becomes difficult. But I noticed when Ohio State played University of Alabama at Birmingham, and of course the West Virginia game was on at the same time, which causes a conflict too. But I kept going back and forth between the two games, and the thing that struck me the most was that even when there wasn't much going on at the WVU stadium, the fans were loud. And when things were going on at Ohio State, the fans weren't loud. So how can you be a fanatic and have a quiet stadium?
This is a different kind of year, though.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it depends on the games. You know, the UAB game should have been the worst game on the schedule. I mean, it was the game. You know, a guy told me recently, complaining about these games, because like, I'd written this column a couple weeks ago about the availability of tickets, and noted these games, the schedule, and a guy, a business guy, called me and said, "Thank you for writing this." He says, "I take clients to the games with these tickets. I belong to the Huntington Club, have these expensive tickets," but he said, "I give these tickets to clients," and the client would say, "Oh, I'm your Eastern Michigan account, huh?" Well, that was kind of the way the UAB game was. You know, it was like, "Oh, I'm the UAB account." You know, so I like a lot of the people, like people that I know who have season tickets. A lot of times, they will pick out their games. They have the season tickets. They're going to go to the Michigan game. They're going to go to the Penn State game. They're going to go to the Nebraska game or whatever, Michigan State. They're going to go to the good games. And then that was for you, Ann. but they're not going to, you know, they're going to give the tickets to their friends for the, you know, the UAB game, you know. And so the people go to the games thinking this is supposed to be 60-0. And when it's 35-0 or whatever, they're sitting there on their hands and they're saying, you know, we're not playing very well. You know, I wonder what's wrong.
Not
you know?
Easy to please sometimes.
No.
But Phyllis.
Well, I do understand that. And I think one of the things I did notice, because West Virginia had easy games at the beginning of the season, too. I mean, all the big teams do. But I didn't know. The other thing that I noticed was that the players really were working up the fans, you know, that they were along the sidelines and they were waving their arms and they were telling, you know, the people to cheer.
Okay. Yeah, interesting how they had to work at it this time in more ways than one. Phyllis, thanks for your call. I want to get to a few more.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Phyllis.
Yep. Rob in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Ann, thank you. The OSU fanaticism is having a wonderful effect on my grandchildren. My 3-year-old grandson was running around in the backyard with a football. He ran from one side to the other and said, "Touchdown, I win, I'm a Buckeye." Right? So I looked at him, and he's 3, and I said to him, "Luke, what does it mean to be a Buckeye?" and he looked me right in the eye, and he said, I'm a Buckeye. I get to win. And, you know, that's the only thing that my grandson takes away from all of this fanaticism, that by being a Buckeye, he gets to win. Boy, that's a great way to start out your life.
That's an interesting observation.
Yeah, that's not just a bad thing. Not a bad thing.
It's just overall high-spirited, good, positive attitude.
Yeah. And what a great way to start out your life, starting off that I'm a winner. You know, I got to thank Archie. I got to thank Fred Taylor. I got to thank Woody and everybody that's helping my grandson and my granddaughters think that they get to win starting off.
All right.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
You too. We just have time for one more real quick. Brian in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Bob, how you doing?
Great, Brian.
Well, I'm a graduate of Ohio State University and from the Alpha Phi Omega. I just want to ask you a quick question, which is the Dispatch going to be having the Reflection Series this year?
What's the Reflection Series?
It's when they had pictures in the paper.
I'm not sure. You're asking the wrong guy. I don't make those decisions.
Everything's changing with the paper, so maybe
We're in a transition period.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. You mentioned Chick Harley, and there was another guy that, there's only one Buckeye that's ever died in the line of duty. And I thought the Ohio State fans are getting better at remembering these people now. Chick Harley, of course, was the guy who sort of made Ohio State what it was. He was an incredible player. Ended up getting sick, mentally ill. I think schizophrenia or something akin to schizophrenia. He was forgotten for many years. Another guy died playing for OSU and was forgotten for many years. Now they have a marker for him.
I think there have also been several players where players died during the war, during World War I.
Who had to leave?
Yeah, a couple of Chick's teammates. Well, Fred, Norton Field is named for one, Fred Norton. You're talking about the players died. I'm having a brain lock. Segrist, who died in 1901 on the field was killed in the basically suffered a broken neck in the Case Western game, Case game.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they are honoring more of these guys in the stadium I will give Andy Geiger started that, and I give Gene Smith credit kind of expanding this. He wants to, he put Woody's name up in the stadium, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing. I mean, I think it's a good thing to kind of remember these players. I mean, I've always thought Chick Harley deserves a statue outside the stadium, and because the stadium wouldn't be there without him. And he's different. He's in a different category than all of these other players. And there is a garden, Chick Harley Memorial Garden, mm-hmm. which is being built on the site of one of his former houses in Old Oaks. Mm-hmm. So, it's happening. There's more and more people remembering these, and that's a good thing.
Bob Hunter, thanks so much for joining us today. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great, Ian. Thank you.
Bob Hunter, author and sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. We've been talking about his new book, St. Woody, The History and Fanaticism of Ohio State Football. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.